Tea, Tarts, and Treachery, by Claire R. Underwood, read by Helen Marsh. Here we go. Prologue. The scent of beeswax and crushed grass hung over the feet like a blessing. Beatrice Wainwright nudged the kitchen door open with her hip, a tray of lemon thyme tarts balanced on her palm. The June sun caught the sugar glaze, turning each one into a tiny stained glass window. She'd been up since 5:30, and her back ached in that particular way that meant she'd done something right. The tart and teapot stall sat between the Women's Institute jam display and the Vicar's tombola, a patchwork of gingham cloth and mismatched cake stands. Lottie was meant to be manning it. But Bea spotted her sister 20 feet away, phone pressed to her ear, bleached pixie cut gleaming as she gestured at nothing in particular. Lottie. Her sister didn't hear. Lottie never heard when there was a screen involved. Bea set the tray down and began arranging the tarts in neat rows. The honeyed scent of baked pastry mingled with the lavender cloud drifting from Flora Pritchard's stall, three tents over. Flora presided over her beeswax candles like a queen holding court. Red lipstick sharp as a blade, Bakelite bracelets clacking every time she waved a hand. Beatrice, dear. Grant's voice, soft and precise, came from behind the competition table. She sat in her folding chair, brass-handled cane hooked over the armrest, silver bun catching the light. The judging had concluded 20 minutes ago, and the winning Victoria Sponge sat in state under its glass dome, a blue rosette pinned to the doily like a medal. Nearly ready, Grant. Bea smoothed her apron. Lottie's on her phone, yes. Gran's eyes crinkled. She'll learn, or she won't. Either way, the tarts will sell. That was Gran. She saw the world as a series of small, manageable truths. Flour before butter. Patience before panic. And never, ever let Flora Pritchard see you flustered. Speaking of Flora, the clack of Bakelite drew closer, and Bea turned to find the woman herself approaching, a jar of honey in each hand. Her lavender perfume hit first, then the steady, unnerving stare. Edith. Flora's voice carried the particular warmth of a cat who just spotted a mouse. I heard about your rose ship jam. Run her up again. What a shame. Gran adjusted her spectacles. The judge preferred Mrs. Higgins's damson. She's been making it 40 years. Fair's fair. Of course. Flora's smile didn't reach her eyes, though I did wonder if the lemon thyme in your shortbread might have been a touch. Assertive. Some palates are delicate. Bea's hand stilled on the tart tray. The lemon-thyme shortbread had been Gran's grandmother's recipe. It had won Best Preserve at the Cheltenham Show in 1957. That's the funny thing about palates, Gran said mildly. They're attached to people, and people have different opinions. Flora's bracelets jangled as she shifted her grip on the honey jars. Well, I'm sure the tea room will survive another year of respectable mediocrity. She swept away, and Bea exhaled, the tension draining from her shoulders. Gran, she's insufferable. She's lonely. Love. Gran picked up her cane and levered herself to her feet. Lonely people make noise to fill the quiet. Now, let me help you with those tarts before your sister decides to start a podcast on our table. Bea laughed and handed her a stack of napkins. The feet hummed around them. Children shrieking near the coconut shy, the brass band warming up in the bandstand, the sizzle of sausages from the Rotary Club barbecue, high summer in Little Headley, all cream teas and cricket whites, and the particular shade of green that only the Cotswolds could produce. Hugh Ramsay appeared at the edge of the tent, tweed jacket slung over his shoulder, sleeves rolled to reveal forearms dusted with soil. He'd been working the walled garden all morning, coaxing life out of ground that had been left to brambles and nettles for the better part of a decade. Bay, he smiled, and something in his hazel eyes made her suddenly aware of the flour smudged across her apron. Those smell incredible. Lemon thyme. Gran's recipe. My favorite. He leaned over the table, and for a moment, the noise of the feet faded to a murmur. I was hoping you might save one for me. Bribery for the parish council meeting tonight. They're discussing the village green preservation order. Gideon Croft won't like that. Bea selected the plumpest tart and wrapped it in a napkin. He's been eyeing that green for development since February. Gideon Croft can take his mustard waistcoats and his Westminster connections and ticks. Hugh caught himself, glanced at Gran and flushed. Apologies, Edith. I shouldn't speak ill. You should speak exactly as ill as you like, Gran said, patting his arm. Just don't let him hear you doing it. The man has ears like a bat and a memory like an elephant. As if summoned, Gideon Croft's laugh boomed across the feet. He stood near the beer tent, barrel chest straining a mustard yellow waistcoat that must have cost more than Bea's monthly rent.